Although I have studied the subject of flying saucers for about 10 years, I would like to explain right away that I have concentrated on one particular aspect of the mystery. I have put the closest possible watch on the skeptics and their reasons for disbelief. I have, as some of you may know, written a book called Flying Saucers and Common Sense. The book deals almost exclusively with the objections of disbelievers, and I have tried to unravel the mystery of the skepticism which undoubtedly exists in spite of the very strong evidence that has accumulated in support of the unidentified flying objects. As most of those who will be listening to my talk will be believers, I would like first of all to address a few remarks to them on the subject of skepticism. In England, a year or two ago, one of our most popular daily newspapers conducted a public opinion poll on flying saucers. The percentage of believers was given as 16.5%. In other words, a small minority. This percentage may have grown recently, but not, I think, very greatly. I cannot speak for the United States, but I will hazard a guess that the percentage is not higher than 20%. I would say that in other countries it is considerably lower. We sorcerers, therefore, are up against it if we want to convert people to our way of thinking. I do wish that all sorcerers would realize this basic fact. I would now like to digress for just one moment. Why should we want to convert the present majority of disbelievers to our side? Is this just mental arrogance on our part? If so, I doubt whether we shall make much progress with our persuasion. Indeed, we may merely serve to confirm the skeptic in his opinion, and it would be better to leave the conversion to the pressure of events, however long it may take. I believe, however, that many of us are arrogant in our preaching, and that the arrogance takes a number of forms. I shall explain later why it is, perhaps, that this arrogance is delaying the full acceptance of the existence of flying saucers, and the solution of the mystery of their origin. Many of you will know the type of torturer who in his enthusiasm will bring forward in an argument something which he claims as proof, but which, on close examination, cannot even be held to be evidence. This is not to say that the rash statement is in itself untrue. It may be true, and a more earnest research into the subject might well have produced the evidence that would have confounded the skeptic. Sorcerers should remember that to satisfy oneself is not the same thing necessarily as satisfying another, particularly on this subject where the will not to believe is so ingrained as to be, in some cases, almost pathological. To assert without the support of evidence is a form of mental arrogance. I would like to give a concrete example of what I have just said. One of the mysteries behind this gambling problem is the attitude of government. Not just the United States government or the British government, but all of them. In passing, I would like to remark that it is no use basing arguments on one country and ignoring others. I have read more than one source book which seems to assume that although sources have been seen all over the world, the United States government has some power of suppressing the truth about them on an international scale. I cannot deny that there is a mystery about the attitude of government. It is assumed that the authorities, here, there, and everywhere, know more about the sources than the United, and that they are suppressing it. This assumption is never questioned by many sources. When the skeptic asks why the news should be suppressed, the sorcerer is forced to find an explanation, and he says, perhaps, that is too surprising. It's a truthful man knows your panic. Why should there be a panic is the next question. Of course, the idea of visitors from Mars is a terrifying idea. Remember the ocean walls broadcast, etc., etc. You know the rest. So since you will have lost this particular argument, he has, in the first place, made an assumption that the government knows all the answers. That's about it. I am willing to believe that it will probably have a very great deal more evidence in its possession than you and I have, in the form of films, sworn statements, and so on. But how on earth does the sorcerer know that this particular government has discovered the whole of the truth? As a matter of fact, one or two governments have denied that the forces had anything but a conventional explanation. You cannot upset these skeptics by inventing a reason for the government's silence. Although you may have guessed, I say guessed, correctly. The second reason why the skeptic will remain unconvinced by the argument is because the touch of arrogance has once again crept in to spoil the sorcerer's case. The skeptic is told that he and his like would panic if the truth were told. Very sensible people, like the sorcerer, superior people in fact, would behave calmly, rationally, and, I must admit, with an air of maddening condescension. Even if it is true that some people might panic in the face of the truth, they do, I assure you, hate to be told so. Now let us look squarely and squarely at this attitude of the government. If there is a conspiracy of governments, it must be worldwide. For those which have spoken on this subject at all have said much the same sort of thing. All of our statements have been hesitant, often contradictory, and altogether unhelpful towards the solution of the mystery. Boiled down, it amounts to the fact that a percentage of the sightings cannot be accounted for in conventional terms. This percentage often varies. I've seen it given as 5%, as 10%, and once, if I remember rightly, as high as 20%. Damn these percentages, I say. They are absolutely meaningless. Who chooses the 100% anyway? On what basis? After all, I am interested only in the cases that can't be explained away, and all the other ones are just red herrings, accidentally or deliberately drawn across the island. But does this government balderdash prove that there is a worldwide conspiracy of silence? I very much doubt it. For this sort of double talk is just the sort of answer you get from any government department in England, and I suspect in the United States as well, when someone starts asking questions to which there is no clear answer. This is known as passing the buck. I think that in the attitude of government, there is much more evidence of a genuine puzzlement than there is of suppression of the truth. I may be wrong, but I do know that this is a much more convincing reply to the skeptic than the flesh creeper line that the sorcerer is so fond of shooting. And if he is honest with himself, he will have to admit that he has introduced this explanation to get himself out of a difficulty with his skeptical friend. Not all skeptics are fools, by the way, and many of them can see through the hole in a donut just as clearly as we can. The trouble with sources is that they are not a repeatable experiment. I read one very distinguished sorcerer who admitted that he had never seen a source, but that he believed in one. He said, in support of this belief, that he had never been to India, but he was prepared to believe the evidence of those who had visited that country. His point lacked all power of persuasion and could easily be destroyed. A person foolish enough to deny the existence of India could put the matter to the test by visiting the spot where that country was supposed to exist and be confounded by finding it exactly where it was going to be. But a biology cannot do this with a saucer. It is here today and gone tomorrow, and won't necessarily come back again the day after it. Therefore, if a saucer lands in my garden and I speak to its occupant, I may feel compelled to share the truth with the world at large. But unless I can support my story in some way or other, I must not be surprised if I am considered a lunatic or a liar. Even confirmed sources may hesitate to believe my unsupported statement. And why shouldn't they? Why should flying saucers be the one subject in the world where logic, common sense, and intellectual integrity can be thrown overboard? Why should the skeptic be treated as a fool? Why should the laws of evidence be scrapped? There are no valid answers to these questions for the excellent reason that logic, common sense, evidence, they all point to the fact that flying saucers do exist and that in all probability they emanate from somewhere outside our atmosphere. As yet we have no scientific proof as to their place of origin, but we do know that they have been seen, that they appear to be solid, and that they behave utterly unlike any aircraft known to man. These are the facts that have to be driven home, and when they are, we shall be on the threshold of the truth. It could take many years. Why is it so important to convert the majority to our way of thinking? Well, I will tell you why I consider it so important. If you can increase the percentage of believers in just one country to near or to over 50%, or even slightly less, then you would place the government, your government and my government, silence on the subject. I believe that this silence may be due partly to the fact that at the moment the fullest explanation is not available. If I am right, then a fear of ridicule would be an excellent reason for the official double talk. If sources grew to a majority, then the government would be forced to reveal what it does know. And it could do so without fear of anything, of panic on the part of the people, of ridicule, or of complete incredulity. The task is up to us in the first place. I doubt very much whether, at this stage at least, the flying saucers are the concern of government at all, unless they are known to be hostile to their people. There are two opinions on this matter, I know, but the evidence is neither clear nor convincing. I have spoken of the attitude of government. What is the attitude of newspaper editors? I can speak with some experience here, for I have negotiated saucer serials, etc., with a number of them. And I count among my friends many editors and journalists, both in London and in the provinces. In fact, my job as a publisher in England brings me into frequent contact with such people. Why are the papers, at the moment, so silent on the subject of flying saucers? Is this due to a conspiracy on the part of the press? I have heard many sources claim that the press is hand in glove with the government and that the editors have instructions to clamp down on all news. This just isn't true. Most of the editors I know are skeptics and they fear ridicule. Unless the sighting is either very good or has a novel feature, the attitude of editors at the moment is that flying saucers are nothing more than last year's stunt. That is the only reason why the saucers have not made headlines in England for such a long time. But there is no censorship. A newspaper is absolutely free to print what it likes about the sources. A local paper in Gloucestershire, England, recently reported an excellent sighting, well corroborated, of an unidentified object about the size of the Queen Mary. It was flying over Cheltenham and was also seen by witnesses in the nearby city of Gloucester. The editor and the reporter are still at large, and they have received no instructions from the authorities to clamp down. The people can, of course, keep on printing the same story, but if another news appears, you will find a report of it in that paper, at least. The newspaper world contains people just like us all, and I would remind my listeners once again that the majority in this world of ours is still skeptical. Nearly all of my listeners will recall an instance in their lives when, for some reason or other, they were obliged to change their mind on an important subject. It may have been religion, politics, or just a matter of business. Gradually, the old conviction disappeared, and a new one, perhaps in violent contradiction with the old, was born. Do you remember how obstinate your old self appeared to the new? You see now how wrong you were, how deaf to all arguments and entreaties. I know it often makes you blush to think of it. Well, the skeptic is in the place of your old self. He will see the light one day if you are faithful. If you are persuasive instead of thinking of it, you can make that day tomorrow.